Good day, folks. It's Kieran Russell here from the Investec Foreign Exchange team. I hope you are all keeping safe and are enjoying the ever-expanding list of civil liberties that are being bestowed on us as this lockdown continues to ease. Isn't it ironic, though, that as our freedoms slowly return, we have had to once again get used to grey skies and drizzling rain? But we're not here to talk about the weather. Today, I am joined by the head of our spot and forwards trading desk, Chris Brand, as well as a person who I can never get tired of talking to about the state of the economy, our chief economist, Phil Shaw. And I look forward to picking their brains on what has been certainly a crazy few weeks on the currency desk. On the corporate flow side of things, we have been flat out, as you can well imagine, as the pound, against all odds, has risen like a phoenix from the ashes, to use a Tyson Fury phrase, certainly against the dollar. Having traded in the 120s just over 3 weeks ago, sterling dollar has managed to actually peak above 128 yesterday. All the while, sterling euro has been extremely range-bound in the 111 to 112 vicinity. So to make sense of it all, I think I'll hand over to Phil first. I'll start by asking the question. With all the talk of negative rates, potential second waves of the virus, not to mention the Brexit extension deadline that is fast approaching, or the fact that the OECD is forecasting the British economy to suffer the worst damage from COVID-19 than any other country in the developed world, is the market getting ahead of itself? And what can we read into, the COVID numbers that we are seeing, certainly both domestically and in the rest of the world? Phil.
Hi, Kieran. Hi, everybody. Hope you're keeping well. Certainly on the pound, we are defying gravity on, as you really put it, the wall of bad news which the UK is confronting with the OECD report. There is still talk about negative rates in the UK, as you said. We've got a Brexit extension deadline at the end of the month where it really doesn't look as if the government is going to try and extend the transition period beyond the end of this year at all. And even when we have a big risk-off day, as we have today, Thursday, the 11th of June, stock market's down about 2%. Sterling really not hit that badly with maintaining a range of 126 to 127. So it's really difficult to explain in fundamental terms. It may well be that markets are just looking at the series of measures being implemented and contemplated by the UK government and saying, hey, yeah, that was a really bad OECD report. We may be looking at GDP falling by 11.5% over this year, but in terms of the direction of travel, it's likely to get much better. And that's really, I think, the only way of rationalizing the pound's relative resilience in recent sessions.
Interesting. And what about the, certainly in the last few weeks, the main macro events that have caught your attention and certainly should be top of the agenda for those listeners out there?
We've had quite a few things. We had the European Central Bank a week or so ago expanding its quantitative easing. And if anything, that was a little bit of an upside surprise in terms of the amount of stimulus which was announced. But I think the one single macro event that really stands out, as ever, I guess, towards the beginning of each month was the US jobs report. And everyone was braced for a really poor number. The figures were for May. The April data showed something like a 20.5 million fall in employment. Markets were settling for a slightly not so bad figure of a down 7.5 million, and actually the number of jobs rose by 2.5 million. Big pause for breath. Why is this happening? Not really clear. Part of it, we suspect, was one of the schemes, the Paycheck Protection Program, gave firms a big incentive to keep their hiring numbers up. So it may well be that that was a factor, but by how much we can't really tell. But of course, markets are saying, hey, we've seen a lot of downside in recent months. Perhaps there's some upside there as well. And that possibility is going to be there in investors' minds, not just in the foreign exchange markets, but also in equity markets and bond markets too.
Well, okay, that non-farm payrolls was an unbelievable shock. I'd be interested to loop in Chris on that here, to get an idea of what that must have been to trade like over that period. What was it like, Chris, for you?
Yeah, it certainly caught the market by surprise, but I think with such a high difference in numbers, I mean, the expectations were like -7.5 million, so it was a big swing. The actual movement in a currency wasn't as dramatic as you might have thought on such a huge number. I think the initial reaction was wondering if there was, something wrong. Is that the right number? Was one of the initial reactions. And I guess there's also classifications of how jobs are classified was one of the questions that people were asking as well. Were there some people that were shown on the payroll but not actually working? So I think in trading-wise, at the time of the event, it was very much people questioning how real the number is and whether there'd be any adjustments in the next one.
Yeah, okay. And then just to lead back to Phil on this, I mentioned the coronavirus and the numbers. Do you feel that we, the opening and the easing of the lockdown at the moment in the UK is kind of going according to plan? Or are you concerned about a second wave? Where do our numbers stack up versus the rest of the world? And obviously there has been this risk on sentiment because, economies are opening up globally, and I just get the feel that we might be moving, too fast. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I think you have to start off with the fact that the UK numbers are awful on the coronavirus. We've had 41,000 deaths, and that's the world's second highest total. But what's more encouraging is the trend. We've had a big fall in reported infections, and that's despite a big ramping up in the amount of testing, which must have pushed up the reported numbers as well. And if you look at the number of fatalities, that's coming down to around 200 a day. Now, obviously, that's still too high, but it's much, much better compared with the rates we're seeing in the second half of April and early May, for example. So the direction of travel is still very much, let's reopen the economy. It's an awful judgment to try and have to make to balance out your economic well-being against the health of your people. And I certainly wouldn't rule out a second wave. And an interesting comparison is the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic and the way that different US cities reacted to the pandemic, and some cities opening up earlier actually did get a second wave. And that's something to watch out for or to guard against in the UK. And in that respect, the test and trace program is extremely important, because then you can isolate specific bits of the UK if you need to do it. From a domestic perspective, everything's going in the right direction. What's very concerning is at the global level, the number of infections is no longer falling. And there are particularly worrying trends in various emerging markets, including Brazil, Mexico, and perhaps India as well. And that might be the next stage globally where markets begin to worry about what's going on in those specific areas, and perhaps in emerging markets in a more general sense.
Interesting. And what about Brexit? I know we've kind of, for the last few months, it's always been COVID-19 that's been top of the agenda. But now we are seeing talks reemerge, and Barnier is having his say. I'm ever so hesitant to think that it's going to run swimmingly. And we are, just 20 odd days away now from potentially knowing whether we extend or not. How does this impact the pound, in your opinion, if we certainly don't extend? And does it bring no deal back into the table?
To answer the last question, yes, it absolutely does. It's a perfectly feasible outturn, and you would expect the pound to become a little bit more worried than it has been. That said, of course, we've got just over 6 months until the end of the transition period. The UK government is absolutely insistent that it is not up for extending transition, and you can sort of understand that in the sense that it believes that if you extend the transition, you just negotiate for longer to the second deadline, which doesn't necessarily mean you achieve more. Difficult to say where things go. You've got the European Council meeting towards the end of next week. The primary issue there is going to be the budget plan. Not much time to talk about Brexit. And I think perhaps what's more significant is the prospect of Boris going out to see von der Leyen, the European Commission president, either in person or by video. And also perhaps talking to individual European leaders in terms of saying, look, we do need to change the negotiating mandate. Otherwise, we're just not going to get any progress. And, you know, that's going to be critical. We hope for a more intensive set of talks and perhaps going on over the summer months. So if European leaders aren't going off on their summer holidays, they might as well be negotiating a trade deal with the UK. But these things tend to be agreed at the very last minute, as we've seen with the Brexit negotiations themselves. That might mean that we don't get anything until the final couple of months of this year. And that does give Sterling a lot more time to become nervous about the possibility of the UK leaving the transition period without a trade deal with the EU.
Yeah, I think certainly from our point of view, and you know, we are speaking to corporates daily. There are concerns that, you know, people are forgetting that this is a grey cloud, a dark grey cloud hanging around. And you know, Chris, just to bring you in on this, I mean, what are your thoughts on in general on this big rise from 120 to, as I said, 128 was the peak. It's off a little bit this morning, but what are your thoughts on that rise? You know, I'd be interested to get your take on whether this has also been some sort of a technical move, and also to probably let our listeners know why sterling euro hasn't seen a similar kind of move.
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, the sterling move has been quite a press against the dollar, but I think that's exactly what it is. It's against the dollar that we're looking at. It is very much risk sentiment. We are seeing a shift out of the dollar as the economy start opening up, so it is very risk sentiment led. And one thing you can look at is the dollar index, look at how that's been performing. So we've seen it was beginning of month 98.20, and it's gone to a low of 96.10. And when you compare that to how sterling dollar has moved, it's very much in tandem. The correlation is very, very tight. And, you know, so the sterling dollar move this month is like 4% higher, which correlates with the dollar index move. When we look at the sterling euro, actually, at the beginning of the month, we're trading pretty much exactly where we're trading now, 11.30. So it's widely unchanged so far this month, albeit in around a 1.5% range. So it is very much a dollar move that we're seeing so far. But in terms of the Brexit headlines, they're not really carrying much weight at the moment. But I think that will change as we get closer towards the end of the month. So I think as we get towards the end of June and things get to more of a deadline, we'll see these comments from Barnier having a big more of an impact on the market.
No, thanks for that. I think you're spot on there, and I certainly think, you know, aside from that Brexit topic, there are some big economic factors that we should also be looking out for. I'd be interested again to get your thoughts, Phil, on what lies ahead in that space, so we can keep our listeners well abreast of what's to come.
Sure. Certainly on the policy front, the next major event is going to be the Monetary Policy Committee from the Bank of England next week. The decision will be on Thursday. And there's been lots of talk about negative interest rates. And if anything, the Bank of England has been a little bit more accepting of the possibility of taking the bank rate into sub-zero territory. Previously, they had been very, very dismissive of that possibility. That seems to be under serious consideration at the bank, but it's much too early to be looking at a realistic chance of that being implemented. Instead, what we're looking at is probably quantitative easing being the main monetary policy tool. And in that respect, we would fully expect the bank to sanction more QE next week. In March, it was looking at an extra 200 billion of asset purchases. It's been buying assets at the pace of around 14 billion a week. So if you do the arithmetic, essentially, the program would be met, our target would be met by early July. And if it wants to carry on going, it really has to sanction that next week. And in that respect, we do expect another 100 billion of QE to be announced by the bank after its meeting. After that, I guess there will be more speculation about negative rates. And we're watching the news flow on how Bank of England officials are looking at the possibility. You know, one big negative is, well, you've are going to hurt the banks. You're going to compress bank margins. And effectively, because of various technical factors on the amount of liquidity that QE brings about, it's an effective tax on the banks at the moment. It would be $1 billion per year if we had a 25 basis point cut from current levels. So lots of things to consider, but the immediate focus on the monetary policy side, I think, will be more on quantitative easing next week.
If you think about the Brexit negotiations, if we do end up going down towards a no-deal hard Brexit, then you could speculate that the Bank of England might have to cut rates further down the line. So maybe at the start of next year, if that's the case where we're going, then there is a chance that the Bank of England could be looking at negative rates at that point from then on. So while I agree with Phil, I don't see negative rates in the immediate future. I think if these negotiations get bad and there's no extension, then this is something we might be looking at further down the line.
And it wouldn't rule out that possibility at all. And if we have an even more extreme set of economic circumstances, then the central bank will respond. And perhaps some of the drawbacks associated with negative rates pale into relative insignificance with the greater macro picture. And then you get more stimulus, rates go into negative territory. The other factor, of course, once again, is fiscal policy. We know that Rishi Sunak wants to begin to wind down schemes such as the coronavirus job retention scheme because of its cost. But again, if the government has to stimulate, it will do. It really depends on the economic circumstances at the time. That said, despite the risks, our central case is actually that you will get some sort of trade deal, tariff-free, relatively light checks in most respects, agreed by the various parties before the end of the year. But of course, there's no guarantee that's going to happen.
Good stuff, chaps. Well, listen, we've covered off a lot, and I gather a lot to take in there. Certainly plenty of food of thought for our listeners. So I think without further ado, it's probably time to wrap this up. I hope that you all found the insights from Chris and Phil as stimulating as I certainly have. Please don't hesitate to reach out to your Investec dealing team if you have any questions on the topics discussed. We will certainly be back in a fortnight with the next episode in the series. For now, stay safe, everyone, and enjoy the rest of your day.